It was September 21st, it was 1997, when the two-year-old son of Guo Gangtang, his son was kidnapped. Gangtang was a resident in eastern China, and child abduction had been a rampant problem for a long time in that part of the country, in large part due to the one-child policy in China throughout the 80s and the 90s. And so what you would find sometimes is a childless couple, maybe that desperately needed a son, wanted a son to carry on the family name, and if they did not have that, then sometimes in moments of desperation, they would even do the unthinkable and acquire a son by purchasing one on the black market with a child trafficker. That's what happened to Gang Tang's son back in 1997. The police immediately put out an extensive search. They searched high and low, but they came up empty. They hit dead end after dead end. They had no leads, and so they gave up hope. They gave no hope to the family, so it was against all hope that the father set out to find his son. Armed with nothing but a bag of flyers and a flag emblazoned with the picture of his son that would whip in the wind, attached to the motorcycle that he would ride some 310,000 miles throughout over half of the provinces throughout China. It's a pretty big place, but it wasn't too big for him. He took it on, and mile after mile, he wore out 10 motorcycles. He had a crash. He broke bones. He was robbed. And people would ask him, like, how long are you going to keep this up? And so for over two decades, he would search for his son. There was a quote in a paper in 2015. Someone asked him, how much longer are you going to do this? And here's what the quote said. He said, only on the road I felt I am a father. I have no reason to stop. It is impossible for me to stop. And then I don't know if you saw this in the news recently. This was just a week and a half ago. After 24 years, they had a break in the case. They have technology now that they didn't have before. They have like facial recognition, they have DNA analysis, and all these different things that actually broke the case. It led them to the suspects, and the suspects were interrogated. So they were questioned, and then they confessed to the crime so many years earlier. And finally, the son was reunited with his parents just a week and a half ago. After 24 years, can you imagine? I mean, I have tried to imagine what it would have been like for Gangtang. Every day he wakes up, a father wakes up with only one thought on his mind, and that is, how am I going to find my son? I wonder how many villages he visited. I wonder how many times he said, have you seen my son? I wonder how many times maybe he woke up in the middle of the night thinking about how he was going to be able to find his son. You see, this is the heart of the Father. This is in many ways the heart of the gospel. You see, Satan has taken what is not his, and he has taken God's children in droves away from the Father. The devil has all kinds of people under his control, working for him on his behalf. And the evil one is set upon separating God's children from their father, separating God's children from their origin, separating God's children from their identity. And consequently, because of that work, there are many children who do not know who they are. And consequently, there are many children who do not know their father, but the father knows the child. This is the theme of Luke chapter 15. Luke chapter 15, Jesus tells three stories. The one we're going to look at today illustrates the very heart of God. Let's read together. A man had two sons. The younger son told his father, I want my share of your estate now before you die. So his father agreed to divide his wealth between his sons. A few days later, this younger son packed all of his belongings and moved to a distant land, and there he wasted all his money in wild living. About the time his money ran out, a great famine swept over the land, and he began to starve. He persuaded a local farmer to hire him, and the man sent him into his fields to feed the pigs. The young man became so hungry that even the pods he was feeding the pigs looked good to him, but no one gave him anything. When he finally came to his senses, he said to himself, "At home, even though the hired servants have food enough to spare, and here I am dying of hunger, I will go home to my father and say, 'Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son. Please take me as a hired servant.' So he returned home to his father, and while he was still a long way off, his father saw him coming. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. His son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son.' But his father said to the servants, 'Quick, bring the finest robe in the house and put it on him. Get a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet, and kill the calf we have been fattening. We must celebrate with a feast, for this son of mine was dead and has now returned to life. He was lost, but now he is found.' So the party began. All of heaven rejoicing at this son that had come home." This is the heart of the father. But I want to begin by just asking a question. Why did the boy leave? I mean, it wasn't for lack of comfort. I mean, he had everything that he needed. I mean, his closet was full of brand name togas. I mean, he had the latest sandals, the Air Force One sandals. I mean, he had everything that someone else would look at and go, "That's cool, that's hip. I want that." He had all the food that he needed. He never went hungry. He could fill his stomach. He had family. He had acceptance. He had everything that he needed. So why did he leave? Well, it's because he didn't have everything he wanted. He had everything he needed, but he didn't have everything he wanted. He wanted more. He wanted more liberty, more freedom. He wanted fewer rules. He wanted greater choices. And so the father allows that. But what would happen first is he would drag his father's heart through a valley of hurt. So, number one, this is what the father heard. "Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me." No explanation, no justification, no, "Dad, this is gonna hurt," no "please," no "thank you," no nothing. The boy just wants what he wants. Now, the original listeners, the people who are sitting there hearing Jesus tell this story for the very first time, they're listening to this through a certain cultural lens that I don't want you to miss. But there's a lot about this story that would have left them scratching their head. First of all, this is quite absurd. I mean, a son just, I mean, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense, right? Like, he wants to gain his inheritance even before his father. Here's what they would have heard. "Dad, I wish you were dead." That's what he's saying. "I wish you were dead. I wish today was the day for your burial. But since it's not, let's just pretend it is. And give me my inheritance." I mean, this would have been unheard of in their culture. This didn't make a whole lot of sense. Why would the son go to the father, and why would he even ask this? And can you imagine the hurt that this would cause the father? Can you imagine the shame and disgrace that this would bring on the father's household. When people started hearing about the runaway son who grabbed his inheritance and took off, wouldn't be long after that, the rumors would begin circulating. The father doesn't know how to take care of business in his own household. The shame, the disgrace, the hurt that this would put on the family. Still yet, the father lets the son go. So he divided to them his livelihood. Doesn't God do the same with us? He allows us to break the rules. He allows us to break our promises, break our vows. He allows us to break his heart. He allows us to step on the path of stupidity. There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. You see, the father watches the son take the wrong path. Look at this. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together. He did not waste any time. He gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. Now, I wonder how long the father stood at the doorway watching his son leave. I wonder after he left how long he stood there. I wonder how many times maybe he walked down the path, maybe just looking at the horizon, just looking to see if maybe he would see that familiar stride of his son that he knew so well, and maybe he thought, oh, no. I wonder how many times he woke up in the middle of the night with his son's name on his lips and on his heart. I wonder if there was ever a sound in the middle of the night that kind of woke him up and thought, maybe. Well, of course he did. Your father did, my father did, our father does. Fathers know what prodigals do. They sell out. Did you catch this? What did the son do? The son wasted his possessions. Now, this verb here, wasted, this is the word that's used also for the seed-sowing farmer. So we get this picture, we envision this farmer who has a handful of seeds, so valuable, so life-bringing, and he takes it, and instead of putting it in the fertile soil, he just throws it into the thorns, throws it into the weeds. This is what the prodigal son is doing. He has taken what his father has worked so hard for so many years, and he's just throwing it away. He's throwing hundreds around like they're nothing. He's throwing them to the pimps, to the prostitutes, to the pushers, to the purveyors of pleasure. And he's allowed to do this. You see, the boy, he's got a problem coming, and that is that all the money is about to run out. Actually, the boy has two problems, because after the money runs out, well, look at what happens next. There arose a severe famine. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into the fields to feed swine. Oh boy, he's got no money, he's got no credit. So now there are no parties, and who he thought were his friends, well, he has no friends. He set out to have greater choices, and now he's realizing he has no choices. Or at least he thinks he has no choices. But to sell out his Jewish heritage and hang out with the pigs. But he's wrong. He does have another choice. The Bible says that the father was pacing the porch, searching the horizon with for the familiar gate. Do you remember that passage? Don't remember that reference? Well, how about this one? Try this one. For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is loyal to him. Or how about this one in Luke 19? For the Son of Man came to seek and save what was lost. Or how about this one? Our God goes after the one which is lost. Or Luke 15:8. He sweeps the house and searches carefully. The Father ever searched for the Son. So, number two, here's what the Father saw. Nothing. Actually, he saw nothing at all. There was no Son walking down the path. Though he would stand there and watch, he saw nothing. Why? Because the Son picked the pigs over going home. He was rebellious. He was prideful at this point, thick-headed, wasteful. I don't know about you, but I think I might write this guy off. Like, I think he's done enough damage, right? Like, he took everything, and then he just threw it away. But not God. You see, God once looked out over a city of people who did the same thing, and what was his reaction? He wept for them. He wept for them. How often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. Don't miss the picture of this. Don't miss the passion of God. He knows that his kids were not meant for the pigsty, yet we choose it, yet we linger at the pig trough. We linger at the porn site. We work longer. We long to be seen. We long to be accepted by our culture. We long to be the life of the party. But deep down, what we really long for, truth be told, is we're longing for home. We long for life back home. And every once in a while, in a moment of clarity, we snap out of the coma and we come to our senses and we think, you know what? Maybe I could go back home. And there was that corner in that upper garage where the groundskeeper lives, and maybe my father would let me like live there. At least I would have something to eat. That's what happened with, here are the words of the prodigal. How many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father. He expected so little, didn't he? But his father gave him so much. So here's what the father did. His father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. Now, I told you that the original listeners, they would have already been scratching their head. I mean, they would have already been, okay, they're trying to be polite at this point. Let the guy finish his story. But they're like back there kind of whispering to each other, like, where is he going with this? Like, this is absurd. This is a crazy story. I mean, first of all, he's talking about the son taking his inheritance, and that was wild enough. That was absurd enough. But now he's coming home, and the father does what? I mean, did you notice what it said? It said he had compassion. Now, I can think of a few emotions that I might have had as a father, and maybe they were thinking the same thing. I mean, bitterness, he's had some time to really think about it. That's a lot of pacing back and forth on that porch. That's a lot of walking down that path looking for him. That's a lot of heartache. I mean, wouldn't that create a little bitterness in you? Maybe a little rage, maybe a little anger. I mean, okay, let the kid come in, but can we at least give him the treatment a little bit? I mean, can we at least make him feel a little guilty? I mean, stare him down. But the Bible doesn't say that. It says that the father had, out of all things, he had compassion, love, and compassion. And then if that wasn't crazy enough, Jesus is telling this story, and the father in the story runs. Listen, church, Mideastern noblemen, they don't run ever. Maybe someone would run to them. Maybe someone would bow down to them. Maybe someone would kiss their ring, but they don't run. But this father does. He takes up his robe and he takes off down the path, running to his son. And he kisses him. Now you need to know that the Greek tense right here, when it says "and kissed him," that wasn't just one kiss. Okay, the tense that is used here is like he is kissing him over and over and over. He's kissing him all over his face. He's got him in he's got him wrapped up in his arms, and he is just showering him with affection. There are no words. There's only love. As far as I can tell, there's no reprimand. There's just a bunch of hugs going on here, and a lot of kisses. And a lot of celebration. You want to know what excites the heart of God? You just read it. He came home. That's what excites the heart of God. Because this is the only time that we can find in Scripture when God runs. Now, we can see him do a lot of other things in Scripture. I mean, when the patriarchs prayed, God listened. When people walked in faith and they trusted him, God blessed them. Zephaniah 3:17 also tells us that God sings over his people. Isn't that cool? When Peter preached, when Paul wrote, I think God smiled. But this is the only time that God ran. And he still does. The same thing still happens today. When the addict pushes away the bottle and pushes away the pills. The same thing happens today when the teenager walks away from that party that they knew they shouldn't have been at to begin with. To have the courage to say, "Not for me." When the dad has the courage to push away from the desk, when he could work another 20 hours, he goes home and he's with his family and he takes care of his family. Celebration occurs. The same thing happens when the atheist walks away from disbelief. The same thing happens when the narcissist walks away from constant self-promotion. The same thing happens every time the prodigal comes home. Celebration breaks out. When we announced that we were going to be studying Luke chapter 15, Max received this email that I want to read to you. This is from one of our members. It reads, "Our next door neighbors had two sons. One took a sort of normal path. The other moved to Florida after college and didn't come home much. And one evening, the dad, Perry, asked us to come over to discuss a family matter and pray with him and his wife. Perry sadly told us that he had just received a call from the son's friend telling him that the son was dying of AIDS. Before that day, the parents did not know or suspect their son was gay. And now he was dying. As you can imagine, their grief was indescribable. So we prayed and talked, and before dawn, Perry had outfitted his car to accommodate his invalid boy and taken off. He drove straight through to Florida, loaded up his son, and brought him home. And the mom and the dad and the other son cared for him until he passed away a few months later." The letter reads, "I can't read the prodigal son without thinking of this real father, not just waiting on the porch, not just running down the path, but driving through the night to rescue his son. That is love." It makes you think about the story about Gang Tang, and when they asked him, "Why do you keep going? Why don't you stop?" He said, "Only on the road. I felt like I am a father." It seems that our Father in heaven is the same. I have a question for you. Do you know this kind of love? And would you be willing to listen closely, to hear the steps of God run down the path to meet you? You turn your ear towards heaven. You incline your ear towards heaven. And if you turn in God's direction, here's what you're going to hear. Quick, bring the finest robe in the house and put it on him. Get a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet. And kill the calf we have been fattening. We must celebrate with a feast, for this son of mine was dead and has now returned to life. He was lost, but now he is found. So the party began. What do you say? We let the party begin. Truth be told. You see, the robe, it stood for honor and it stood for acceptance. You see, the father didn't just want the son to understand what was going on, but the father wanted everyone to know. And so he puts a robe on him. This is my son. He is honored in my house. He is accepted in my house. I know all that, but this is now. And then he puts a ring on him. What was that? What was the ring all about? The ring was saying, the father was saying, he has my authority in my house. And then he gives him sandals. That was his way of saying, this is my son. This is not a servant, but this is my son. And then he throws a party. Why? Because he wants everyone to know that his son has come home. Do you know that kind of love? Do you know that kind of passion of a father's heart? Do you know the God who stays? Do you know the God with wide open arms, ready to receive you?